337, Christopher, head coach of Space Station Gaming, SSG, is joining us today. We're going to break down stage one of EMEA, maybe even get in a little bit of NA talk if time permits. We've got a new hero in Venture. They're digging around, rolling around at the speed of sound. They're actually not rolling, they're mostly just digging. The Faceit League apparently is now a thing. We'll probably have to talk about that. And we'll decide whether or not this is actually the Game of Thrones era of Overwatch. Chris, how are we doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you for having me again. Fifth time? What do you reckon?
I feel like you have to be just an honorary member at this point. Just too many times.
Well, also a rival, right?
I have a bone to pick. Like, Everil actually phrased that perfectly. Everil said, like, playing the Fortress arc and thinking this is rivalry is like failing the Prisoner's Dilemma in real time. That was the phrase that he used. I believe that's true as well. I never believed in rivalry. Like, we're not really doing with what Platchett is doing either.
Yeah, no, 100%. I was always never under the illusion that, like, we were ever gonna get Platchett numbers, and we covered different things. I feel like we were interested in different things that Platchett were. So it's like, if people like Platchett, cool. If people like Uncoachables, great. Like, we need more people eating up the content. We need more, like, eyes on product. So the more the merrier. I genuinely believe that.
If I was genuinely just optimizing for viewership, you'd probably know the color of my butthole by now, okay? Like,
loving the demonetization. Love that. Great. Yeah.
No, I looked at the time. It's 2 minutes in. We're good.
Okay, good. At least you're aware. It's good.
Yeah. I see it the opposite. I see it as a pure rivalry. Platchett are my arch nemesis.
Hell yeah.
And I will do everything in my power to take them down. You know, they started to pay guests. That's the word on the street. There's the
McAfee hours out here.
Yeah, since Uncoachable came on the scene, they started to have to pay people to keep up with us. You know, we just get them for free. People want to come on our show, whereas Platchett's begging them to come on. That's just a rumor, though. I haven't heard it.
That's crazy.
Would you go if they invited you?
They never have once, you know, like all my podcasts you guys all the interviews.
Oh,
like they've never once invited me. I see them invite some like really boring people who are like shit, and then they never once invited me, no matter what. So, you know, at this stage, fuck them, you know.
Look, they're like the light, and you guys are the shadow. Okay, that like they're fundamentally like just on the other side of the moon, you know.
True. I see them, the Platchett, that guy's like the casters, the analyst, all of them, they're like the establishment. They're the Overwatch establishment.
True, the man.
That they've been holding us back for years. And what we need is some form of a revolution to take them down. You know, I saw your episode with Custer on the other day, and he just made the list, you know, when he talked about when you guys were discussing the Uncoachable podcast, and when Custer starts saying, oh, the only reason they got successful is because they clickbait Koreans and flame the casters. I'm like, that's why the establishment has got to go, because these people are out of touch. They don't understand why Uncoachable is successful. It's not because we just clickbait. It's because we actually have a sense of humor which resonates with the actual Overwatch audience.
Yes,
you know, like
we
don't just have a sense of humor which is so unbelievably PG washed, like just like there's no like actual human being like humor in it, you know. And I understand why. Like, I'm not even like saying, oh yeah, they should be more edgy, because I understand like Blizzard and Overwatch, but when he said that, I'm like, and when he makes a little comment like, oh, I like to say nice things on the internet, I'm like, yeah, okay, good man, yeah, like say nice things on the internet, that's like
the thing,
that's fucking fantastic, you know.
I agree, but I also think you guys, like, I remember the Gumba episode where you guys said like basically execute a caster every season in the, you know, public court and make an example out of them. I feel like that what was not acknowledged is that cast is also just beholden to the, you know, broadcast rules and like the Disney Plus appeal that they have to have, you know, like some of those guys had potty mouths too. Like they just like,
that's true for sure. Like I'm not, I understand that. That's what I mean. Like I understand why the broadcast is like, has to be like PG, you know? And I think there was obviously an element of humor when Gumba is talking about taking people out back and shooting them, you know?
Sure,
But
even though, you know, the way he builds his teams, you wouldn't know.
Yeah. He loves to shoot people in the back of the head when he can. But you also know that there was like a few games casted this weekend where had there been some sort of Hunger Games situation that maybe we would have had better casting, I think. And I think you agree with it too, even though you won't admit it.
Look, okay, what I will say is we're now also in a different situation where, like, I feel like, and I said this always, and I said this in back channels as well. Once you make it financially infeasible to just cast one game, necessarily the quality of your
Yeah, of
casting will
course.
deteriorate, right?
Yeah.
Like, you, if being a two or three or four game Andy is so challenging, especially like in being able to have an understanding of what's going on the screen, especially in an ever-changing game as Overwatch, right? But I will say I couldn't even tell you. I couldn't, like, there's a couple of casting duos that are not perma-mute for me, just because, like, I also watch a lot with friends in Discord, and usually, like, you know, hanging out with the boys and like chatting some shit is a more interesting experience, and I think that's also the appeal of co-streaming. I think co-streaming to me personally is a much more appealing product. By the way, tell Commander X you should stop shoutcasting during his co-streams. I think that makes
Yeah,
little sense.
we spoke about it. I've spoken about it before. I'm unsure. Like, I always felt the same that like it would be better if he just. But I think especially because he doesn't normally have guests on. I almost feel like what I always find is the best Overwatch experience is when X is actually gets a lobby slot. So he does the overhead. So he does the observing and casts it. And I'm like, ah, okay. I actually fully know what's happening. Like, he explains every play. I get to see every play. I'm like, okay. If Blizzard just donated all of the observer and cast him, and he just gave it to X, they like level up their product and presumably like save 80% of their cuts. But yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know where to go. Like, because sometimes I'll join in, and then when obviously when I join in, or Gumba joins in, like there's no casting. We're just like talking shit about stuff. But I also feel like when he's on his own, that maybe like casting is like a slightly like preferable way than just sat there talking. I'm actually not sure.
I think
It's definitely
a
harder to just stand there, like just sit at a camera and just like talk to nobody. At least like as a cat, like if you assume the archetype of a caster, you have like a job to do, you have like a guiding, like you have a North Star to kind of like point towards and be like, okay, well, I'm gonna talk about this and that and this. If you just sit there, I don't know, it could get a little awkward. I could see maybe where he's coming from.
I think in order to appeal to this audience, you gotta let your little inner gremlin come out a little bit. You probably want to sit on your feet on your chair and like, you know, casual it out if you're alone. Otherwise, like the counter example is like the SLS Avast deal where you just invite a lot of folks to chat shit. And sometimes it also just goes off topic because the game is not very interesting. And that's also
Yeah,
good
and that's
to
okay.
sort of get away from it. I think like it's a noble ideal, but I think eventually it will just prove to not be super fit. I think people actually do not really care about analysis. Like if X started calling people shit and whatnot, and like actually started calling people out, I think that might be something that
Oh,
resonates. But
we are so primed for that. If somebody wanted to, not to kick a dead horse, like assume the role of LS within Overwatch, holy, oh my God, the numbers you would pull. We are so ready for just a shit lord to come in and just tell everybody that they're shit and that their macro sucks and that you shouldn't be playing this comp and that comp. It doesn't even matter if you're right. Just if you have the absolute like cojones to like want to do that and shoulder that, you'd make some money.
Yeah, I will say that I obviously he's one of my best friends in the scene, but I do feel like what X has done has actually been really important for the scene. I feel like I sometimes when I watch the content X puts out, and I put like the level of like analysis and like the reviews and the co-streams and the interviews and all this, sometimes that's where I look at the establishment figures and think, fuck, you guys like should have been doing this, like the level of like passion for Overwatch that X has in terms of like watching everything breaking down, like really, really like follows the scene, like what you said, Yiska, is 4,000% true, right? That like if you can't live off casting Overwatch full time, you can't like dedicate everything to it, right? But there's also like a part of me which saw like Necco would like finish casting and then immediately go play like TFT on stream during the NA games, and there's always a part of me which like I think I have like that like Gumba mentality where like I'm so all in on this, and like I'm willing to take like a lower salary, and I see people like X who are willing to like not like to give up a salary to follow it. And whilst like I, for sure I understand like the reasons why, you know, let's pay TFT and let's stream this or let's do this. That's where like sometimes it like something inside of me like it rubs me the wrong way a little bit, you know.
I think yes, I understand what you mean, but you'd also would probably say like there's an argument to be made for coverage, right? Like how many hyper goblins are there actually in the audience, and would you not extend it if you had more approachable normal people that, you know, you could actually let roam free in the free worlds without, you know, just like someone or some appeal and widening the appeal of the broadcast. Because let's be honest, like I have the same struggle for a better word, but elitist bend. I understand it. I think especially like guys like us have also take like I think there are a lot of people in the scene that could just be making way more money elsewhere. And have opted not to do so because for the love of the game. And the coexistence feels initially like a problem, but you have to understand that this is not someone taking away value, but actually just applying it and bringing in another audience that ultimately also feeds back into it, because there is a self-contained amount. And I agree, like where I definitely agree with you, and I think that's something Uncoachable brought to the audience, is that the hardcore gremlin mode that actually is like the player base is, especially the pro player base, which is the core of every esport, right? The people that make it a little bit more comfortable to have these frank talks and have that drama, and also can sustain the naysayers and keep talking through it, that's definitely something that was entirely underserved in OWL.
Yeah.
And
like I think you maybe said it in a tweet where you like you said, oh well, Uncoachable wouldn't have like existed during the Overwatch League days.
Yes,
I think you're fundamentally right, you know. Like I don't even think like the humor we use on Uncoachable is like outrageous, you know. Like I think maybe we make like too many jokes related to like 1940s European politicians. but like for the most part, I think that we're relatively on the edge, and I don't think we say stuff like this like too like out there and offensive. But I also think it wouldn't have, and there's no way our org, like Cloud9 would, or like the Overwatch League would have for sure been in our DMs like, yo, please like stop doing this, you know. And I don't know what, if you were to predict, but like my feeling somewhere is that even in Overwatch, which like probably has like a different what's the word? Like the player base, like demographic is probably different in Overwatch than it is in Call of Duty versus other games. Yeah. I still think that like the sense of humor that like Unta and the Uncoachable brand, I still think we're at like 85% of Overwatch players exist in that type of humor, even if we have like a lower percentage than other games.
Yes, but keep in mind, like Overwatch League was not shooting for a player viewer base only, right? It wanted to attract people that don't necessarily play the game and wanted to be self-sustaining and not profit share from the game. Like the esports division was relatively separate and was strategizing as to be self-sufficient from revenue sources that aren't effectively tied into the game, right? And therefore also looked at outside sources. And it, like a lot of these decisions, you just have to look top down. Who's making those decisions? Who's actually making those calls? Who wants to be on Disney Plus? What is the benefit there, right? And I think shooting for casters is probably shooting too low. I think, yes, there's probably a selection question, which I mean, my elitist agrees with, but there's still something to be said about the scope. Had it worked, I think, like, which in my opinion, it never would have. But had it worked that way, it just makes sense in the way the league was set up around broadcast revenue structures, right? Like, if your biggest revenue source is broadcasting and you have to be PG'd for that, like, of course, that's your broadcast direction. And that's your selection for talent. And that's what you tell them in every meeting. And that's when you cut back on the edginess of maybe season one and season two. And then you prune players for really not that edgy content on Twitter and establish a pattern of communication from players where they just do not want to communicate as much, right?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I should say too, like, I feel like actually the casters one was one that was brought, like when we did that episode, like I got like, I almost every caster DM'd me in one way or another. And then some of them were like, really like quite upset. Some of them were like, kind of agree with you, to be honest. And there was like there was like a real like mix, but I feel like, I don't think we go after the casters every week. And B, I think that like our criticism more than anything is like, is at the product. And I think you're probably right. Ultimately, like the people that we are like attaching the blame to or criticizing are like the casters and the broadcast. Yeah. Whereas a lot of the decisions that get made are not made by them and they're just like kind of told. But it's also hard for me to figure out like who else to like to criticize for the product.
Yeah, it's completely faceless.
Yeah.
100%.
So, a lot of it is just like criticism of like, because obviously what I want, because I want like the scene to grow, like for my own benefit, I'm not like some sort of like selfless individual. I think that the product wasn't as good as I would have wanted it to be. And I look at other esports games and I thought our product was worse. But I, like I've said, I think I don't necessarily blame like the casters for that. I think there was probably one or two casters which I don't think should have been like casting at that level, and one thing or another. But like for the most part, I don't think like the casters are to blame for the Overwatch product. I do think that clearly it was like a management decision above them, and a lot of them were kind of like, yeah, just following orders, for lack of a better term.
It's also just like fundamentally a lot of these suits not understanding what is actually interesting about it. Esports. And this is where like a little bit of the acquired wisdom for the EFG crowd comes in. I think, for instance, like in their Counter-Strike circuit and desk work, I think they're almost leaning into the co-streaming vibe. They're much more loose. Yeah. They're allowed to drop F-bombs now, right? Mm-hmm. And I think fundamentally that is a much more compelling product that actually hits at the core gamer audience in a better way. But yes, you have to get rid of most of the sponsorship, big sponsorship brands, monetization or revenue streams in terms of like you have to build that you can work without them, right? Like how Riot is now looking towards monetization more of the in-game items and having everyone have a share there, right? If you want a peachy clean brand, even it's not just the broadcasting rights, but it's also like with a super edgy product, are you getting Coca-Cola, right? You might get someone else. You might get some crazy energy brands, right? There's also definitely, I don't know if you saw that, but currently at the PGL majors, they are legitimately sponsors that are illegal to advertise for in Denmark. With one expat. So they're definitely skirting the line there as well. But yeah, like that just means like that revenue stream is then gone. And we're not there yet in terms of the scene setup because the monetization alternatives right now in Overwatch, like the prize pool split, we don't know what level of effort Blizzard will put into these skins, right? Like, and revenue share is like, crowdfunding, okay, but revenue share with teams is so far away, right? If anything, like it, now it seems more likely that Faceit might be trying to play for, another Louvre agreement that they got shot down for in CS, right? Like Louvre agreement being a partnership with the teams. I'm not saying that's something I heard behind the scenes, but like if you let Faceit run your circuit, you're opening certain liberties up, right? And effectively, let's be honest, EFG is, in essence, the Esports World Cup. There's a lot of stipends flying around the scene right now of the Esports World Cup. So effectively, that's already in some way happening here. Okay, so I kind of see like the revenue streams working differently. But also, let's be honest, like the average salary in this scene is not great. And even for the good paid teams, not the best paid teams, but the good paid teams, barely livable.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. I think Like, I think our salary is probably one of like the higher across all teams, and even for us, like I think we're very aware that we need like decent prize pool to be able to kind of like, or like the World Cup prize pool, you know. I think like from what I understand, like Falcons are earning like they're okay, and I feel like Toronto's isn't Overwatch League level, but isn't bad. But beyond that, I feel like yeah, most of them are like yeah, the salary is okay, but people need like a second source, either streaming or prize pools or whatever it is, you know.
It's actually quite sad what is an interactive offer right now for unsponsored players, and what can
Anything.
Seriously be entertained, right? For someone that's just outside and wants to make some money back or have some opportunity to travel more, right? Needless to say, the disparity of resources is crazy to me. Like, for instance, you cannot compare what, like, let's say the lower sponsored teams that still have a brand attached to them with like Falcons or with like Toronto. They offer a salary that's, yes, not Overwatch League level, but they also offer housing, right? Then compare that to the lower ranking like sponsored teams. Some of them are triple digit euros or dollars.
Yeah.
Right,
$100
not,
here.
Not,
you know?
Not four digits, triple digits.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No housing.
Nope.
You're probably losing after the money, like after your contract runs out, and probably not over the entire annual year, and on electricity, and you know, like paying for internet and whatnot, right? And your hardware, which some teams also have not included. Right, it's just like being sponsored is not being sponsored in the same way that some teams are.
Yep. Not all built equally. It's for goddamn sure.
Yeah. I think realistically, like 2-3 teams in each region will be able to make a living. And beyond that, it has to be a passion project or like hope. Because the problem is like, when it was like this type of salary back in the day, there was this like promised land, this holy land of the Overwatch League, where you'll actually earn a lot of money, you know. And like, I was there for 5 years, so I actually have like pretty decent savings from that. Mm-hmm. So for me, in those first few years, when I was on Hammers Esports getting scammed around, and I went to Mosaic and I got scammed around, like it was all for like the greater good, you know. Like there was like this like end goal at some point. Whereas now, like. I don't know the details of Ence's contract, so I'm obviously not going to like sit here and like try to guess it. But like for Ence to be able to like rip Chase Torch from EXO, I don't think they're offering like buyouts or like a good salary. Like it takes very little to convince someone to join like a team at this level, you know?
Yeah.
And you bring up like that promised land, and we obviously have a little bit of an idea of like how teams are going to be qualifying to this new promised land.
Before you switch topics, let me squeeze Chris real quick for some juice. Your fusion salary, or let's say your best coaching salary, would probably be on par with the best paid player in the game right now, no?
My Spitfire and my Fusion salary, like once I renewed on Fusion, was 80k. That was the highest I've ever been paid. So I think Falcons are maybe in that ballpark, but it's pure guesswork.
Mm-hmm.
Or like what I hear.
It's a lot. Yeah. I mean,
80k is really, really fine. Like with housing included, it's really okay.
Yeah, with housing included, did you have food as well, right?
So the first year on Fusion, I got paid, I think it was 60k, but I had to do my own housing. So I had to rent a studio apartment in the expensive area of LA. So I basically broke even on it. And then when I when we renegotiated the contract, we agreed to do housing, and Spitfire obviously covered housing, and both all my contracts covered food. So food was never an issue. Housing was an issue for 2 years, but not like the last three.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, and okay. I I also heard very different rumors on the Falcons salary, so I won't comment on that. But yeah, I think like that's outside of those contracts, barring like any unannounced orcs or, you know, like outside show. I'm not sure what Rock is paid or what Twisted Minds is paid, right? But like any other organization that's reasonably in my orbit is not remotely close, right?
No, I think you're right. I think even like TM and Rock, like from what I understand, a lot of the contracts for a lot of the teams are very... I mean, I guess Overwatch League wasn't even too, right? Like Kevster would get paid more than like the rookie that joined Gladiators that season. But I think that like, for example, I'm guessing if you checked like Rock's checkmate salary will be more significant than one of the like the Saudi players. And it feels like there is like for most teams, maybe not Toronto or Falcons, like a little bit of like unevenness.
Yeah, it makes sense. Did you put a lot of value on prize pool splits for your current contracts?
That was our biggest priority. Yeah, we would. We had two offers from two orgs. One org was offered a higher salary, but they wanted to take like a 50-50 split between us. Oof. And then SSG. I probably won't go into my contract too much. It feels like something I shouldn't do. But they probably gave us a much nicer prize pool split, which, you know, assuming that you finish, let's say, above fourth place in Europe, I think is the correct decision to take.
Would you say which other orc offered?
We were speaking a little bit to Fnatic.
Okay.
But I don't know what's happened with them since then.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's always a name that's kicked around in Overwatch, and I feel like as we get closer to the World Cup, that was kind of like my next follow up was like, you know, you talked about like that golden path to walk in those early days of Overwatch, and you had like a direction to like point to and a goal to work towards. Do you feel like the World Cup is that for you guys right now? Do you feel like this is just like a growing pain that, you know, as we get closer to the World Cup, as we get more details, like the money will start coming in, orgs will be a little bit more interested once we really get entrenched in who's qualifying, who's not qualifying, you know, teams like Fnatic maybe come back?
My guess, and I'm sure Yiska will nod or shake his head, my guess is every team that does qualify for the World Cup, all 16 of them will be sponsored. I think that's 100%. Almost like guaranteed. The question will be for, like, let's say EXO finish third in Europe.
Sure.
They would get picked up by an org, I'm sure of it. But the question would be, would that org want them to play just for the tournament and give them some sort of like deal there? Or... would the organization look to sign them as a more of a full-time thing? That much I'm unsure about. But my feeling is that like the way that the orgs did it, you either got an early, like maybe like Space Station and Entstage or M80 and try to secure the best roster you can. Or if you're like not quite there, then you just wait to see who qualifies and just pick up what you can later on. That's literally guesswork, but I feel confident that's how it'll go. I don't think there'll be a single unsponsored team at the World Cup by the time they play.
Yeah,
in any game, I think.
I think the problem we really have is we do not really know how the Esports World Cup's point system will work, right? Maybe it's just worth getting your brand out there in the World Cup in a different game for relatively little buy-in costs. That's very possible. I think every esports organization that's in this sector probably had a good idea about just about everything that's currently being announced, including the Faceit League, including the participation of Overwatch at the Esports World Cup. That much has not been a secret. So, yes, there were like other orcs probing around, also the North American scene, also Tier 1 orcs. I just wonder why nobody finds value here. Right, and you might be right that eventually people will come in, but it really will depend on is the viewership high enough to justify just picking up someone for that event, and will you keep them around after? And then the point system, is it just summation, or is it you can only get, like, you know, put your best five results of your teams into the average ranking? or do certain esports give more points than other esports? And how does Overwatch relate here, right?
I think all those are like super important, but I think the end, like the ultimate like linchpin of it all is like there is just too much money not to just try to throw a contract at like an EXO or a Rock or, you know, one of these unsigned like good teams that could qualify and just try to get a percentage of that cut. You know what I mean? Like ultimately, like nobody's not going to be there.
The thing
there will always be a signed team. Whether
you
or not
even
like
take that as an org. That's another thing. Where, like if I'm relatively confident as an unsigned org right now, I'm probably not signing and trying to, you know, have someone take something from my prize pool cut.
Right? Yeah. It would the offers, like from an organization point of view, it feels like they would have to offer you something like pretty significant, like in terms of like, oh, we'll pay you 20K plus we'll take like 10% of the prize pool. Because obviously players are never like they call it like the club program, right? Where like there is the clubs will like go in the leaderboard and they'll get points for each game. It feels like the clubs themselves, like the players are not going to take any money of that prize pool. So the orgs are going to take 100% of that. So you can, I think, like, especially if you do it for one of like the smaller games, like a StarCraft or an Overwatch, I think you can conceivably offer like a pretty good amount of prize pool to the players because you're going to take all of the prize pool from.
Right. If that contributes enough. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I think
my feeling is there's no way Overwatch counts for more points than League of Legends. I just can't see.
Not. Yeah.
But I don't. I literally have no idea. This is just me like predicting how the tournament's going to go. Like there is no like insider information here.
I also wonder if Riot is even going to be there this year. I would stipulate at this point that it's probably not going to happen. But we'll see.
It is. It is getting, you know, long in the tooth. It's been a minute. I know. You know, Jacob.
Did they not originally agree a deal, but then never confirmed it? Presumably. Backlash related.
I think it's just like really hard to make work on this shorter notice around there. Like they left some leeway in the calendar, but I think it's non-trivial. And honestly, like I'm not sure if the Esports World Cup is just very gated with their information and like everything is already like super clear behind like tight NDAs, or if it's actually a little bit chaotic behind the scenes in terms of like what kind of time window you can realistically expect these competitions to happen.
Was there not, correct me if I'm wrong, was there not some article by like quite a reputable source?
Yes.
Like but before any announcement saying Riot for the first time in history is partnering with a third party tournament organizer?
Right. So the report was in a report talking about the possibility or like looking at it, and Riot tried to sell it as we're just looking at third-party tournament organizers. But like the then internally also selling that it's actually a good thing and, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But whatever, right? Like you can think about what you will. But it was never like about the confirmation of their participation, but more confirming that they're currently in talks about it. And I'm not sure if it would be backlash related, more so than logistics, but that's just like my gut feeling, looking at like the outside. I have no internal information on that. It just feels like it's maybe they're currently really still hashing that out, and it's yet to be announced. It's getting closer though, because you need qualifying methods. I mean, I suppose you could use like
top 3 LCS or something.
Right. Yeah. We'll see how it works there. But I generally agree. Like that, we already know that Fortnite, Rainbow Six, Counter-Strike, like Overwatch is not going to give more points than Counter-Strike. No. I don't see it. Right.
No, I agree.
No.
So then if you're already not getting the best team in the world, how many points are you realistically getting for your team? And what's the investment there? I think what we might see is some teams just going like, might as well roll the dice. We have some facilities here. We'll offer you a bootcamp slot. Maybe we even have apartments here. You can sign with us for the duration. Can bootcamp here. And then we'll... I'm not sure how the traveling accommodations are paid for. I assume Esports World Cup would pay for that. And those deals I could see, especially if the price pool split is like a modest 90-10 or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In those cases, I think that there's a lot of value where even an unsigned team could look at the cost-benefit analysis and think that they might come out ahead and then hopefully convince with their performance at the actual event.
Right.
And get a long-term contract with the team. It's just, it's, I feel like Overwatch is currently in such a limbo state where the investment is like, especially from Blizzard, is way too low, right? To be at all confident going forward. And it feels really like everyone's just looking towards the first LAN tournaments and the development and the growth charts of viewership in terms of the co-streaming and general streaming appeal. And then one litmus test will be how much profit those skins generate for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To realistically, and by the way, like if I'm one of you guys, I'm looking at Celsius playbook and probably Ben together. That's an actual prisoner's dilemma situation where like you all want to be promoting that pack in order to, you know, it's not just like about the money that you directly get, but also the confidence in the model of revenue sharing that you then inspire into the developer and the developer putting out more skins or more appealing products and giving more resources, therefore attracting more organizations. It's like a short term and a long term win, right? But yeah, I feel like everyone's just waiting for something to happen. And even that was a good interview by X, by the way, with Bailey, where she just said like, okay, we're like, our goal for this year is to just do it. That's what it feels like right now.
100%. I feel like that was kind of like, and I feel like we even talked about it on the show that like this was going to be a huge, like a big opportunity for Blizzard to like sink some money in, but it's so difficult to both build the product and like find what new direction that you're going to go in on, you know, relatively short notice. And also gather the confidence in the market to be able to fund it, you know, because it's at this point it probably isn't going to be from Blizzard. They just scuttled a multi-billion dollar esports league. I can't imagine that they're going to be fronting the cost too much. They're not going to be wanting to front the cost.
You don't
put it that way.
You don't have to. All you need to do is develop, like try to give some developing attention, especially in the microtransaction market, and see if that generates incentive structures where both the esports teams and players are incentivized to sell the skin and you're incentivized to promote through that, especially if I'm already like not getting my profit share because I'm undercutting goals set by the team and I don't know how to sell skins in this game. Maybe esports could be one thing. Like they are in the esports, wider in the esports industry, right? They are sort of different signals being sent. So for instance, in Dota, there is a plausible case that esports themselves actually do not really offer that much of an attraction. Because what happened was, as soon as TI dropped like the full effort where the actual skin bundle, the pass, was the actual attraction because the skins were super dope and like those attracted these huge prize pools. As soon as they scaled it down and made it really more about esports brands, the price pool dropped off a cliff, right?
Right.
It was actually, for the consumer, it was about the value of the what was in their battle pass. Not necessarily what, or companion or whatever it was called, right? At the same time, if you look over at CSGO, and yes, it's a very different economy there, but there's 110 million generated in sticker revenue just for teams at the Paris Major. We don't know what it will be right now. In League of Legends, Valorant, it seems to be popping off, right? Like we don't have figures yet. I would say like that would be something where like the very esports product, it's not that the skins look great. They actually look quite ass.
Yeah,
but it is about the like being part of their experience and people buy it in order to identify with these esports.
Yeah,
players,
it's a fandom.
So like they are confusing signals. Still, I would say, also once again bringing back the number from what I heard and he used to one Cologne. Yes, keep in mind, this is probably a biased source, but it, like, Jens Hilges of Bitcraft said that he... So Bitcraft is one of the biggest esports and gaming VCs around.
Mm-hmm.
He said, like, there's data to believe that between 15 and 45% of the League of Legends player base got there through esports. Okay? So if you're struggling for player base, that's another selling point that you might look towards, especially in a game that now doesn't have PvE, right? So, like, yes, I understand. We just killed a $500 million esports franchise league, and it mainly because it didn't create the buzz. But maybe you also have to look at why the World Cup only generated 500,000, while other esports products generate 110 million for their teams, right? Like, and I'm not sure about revenue splits, but yes, there's like a, you know, two standard deviations difference here, right? And I think that's, like, if I'm a developer, I'm looking at that. I'm trying to give it a little bit more. I mean, they are the viewership incentives. Fair enough. They're giving us something, right? But at the end of the day, like, it's not enough. And it's not enough for any dedicated esports team to look at this system and do it for anything else but the involvement with EFG and with the Esports World Cup, if we're being realistic.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, we've talked about that as well, where it's like, you know, at the end of the day, we're here, like, with the announcement that Overwatch 2 is participating in the Esports World Cup. We know what kind of money that is being thrown around for that event. Like, that ultimately is the tier one event that everybody's playing for. We are in a TI primed market, to, you know, go back to Dota for a second. But to not to completely synthesize what you're saying down, but is your major gripe the times table on the content that is to provide confidence to the market? Like, would you have wanted that skin sooner? And do you think that is going to, you know, surpass World Cup numbers?
I want a better skin offer than what World Cup offered.
Okay.
Like, the team skins were pretty ass. Was like an orange skin. I want a better offer and a more something that treats esports with more reverence than that Dallas Fuel skin.
Fair.
Lord knows if Florida is even getting one. Probably not.
No.
But even if that wasn't the case, like, the offer that you get in order to crowdfund the pools for Dallas and for Stockholm should just show some effort. It cannot just be a reskin, right?
No, 100% it can't. Yeah. If we load into Dallas, we're on land, we're all excited, we got our popcorn, we're back, baby, here we go, and it's just a reskin Soldier 76. Yeah, sell it all. Everybody out.
You'd definitely, like, if you got your team skin, right, you'd sell that shit, Chris, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, fundamentally, if there was, like, an incentive structure, then I think it's one of the reasons why when, like, they announced the new, like, Face It League and stuff, I'm going to try to, like, tweet about it, and I'm going to try to... I'll be honest about what I think about it, but I'll also, like... I mean, I actually really like the idea. I think that actually it's a very interesting idea that, like, I think provides, like, potentially, like, an additional layer of, like, sustainability. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to lie about it, thankfully. But, yeah, I think it's the same reason why I push a lot for, like, the streaming of the scrims, because I felt like there was, like, this, like, collective, like, the players actually have to really participate in making this grow and making this, like, sustainable. And if that means tweeting how good the Mercy skin is, then I think pro players should do it and they should wear it on stream. Yeah, like, we have to use our influence to help the game grow for our own good as anything else, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think, like, in now, I feel like when we talked about it in terms of, like, streaming scrims, I think the immediate value in my mind, you know, in terms of what kind of viewership it would attract, didn't seem enough to save it. But I now see the effects and the genius of it in terms of what it does to players, where, you know, like, you know that bear that is kept in a cage for 5 years and then you take the cage away and he's still just running in circles and doing the same thing for the rest of his life? sometimes you got to shove the bear, right? Like, sometimes you got to show him that he doesn't actually need to walk the same circles because the cage is gone. Yeah. And I think the streaming of scrims also means you're already, you know, you have OBS up. You might, you know, chat a little bit, develop that skill set. You know, stream some ranked, flame there a little bit. Go, you know, inch closer to the type of content that actually resonates with the audience. Yeah. And we still, let's be honest, there are very few personalities still in this scene, but it's coming.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's still, again, that was a huge reset. We're just finishing the first like quarter of our first year post Genesis. You know what I mean? Like post Overwatch League dying, we are 25% of the way through. It's gonna take some time, and I hate saying that because I feel like we've always said that forever, you know, in Overwatch. But it'll take some time. I think you're right that like the bear will wake up and maybe snort some cocaine and go a little crazy. One or two of them will. Will they do illicit drugs? You know, time will tell. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Joe. You wanted to go into the next subject, and then. I had to squeeze a little for juice.
Okay. You're good. I'm, you know, welcome back to the land of the living. You've unstunlocked yourself. I'm going to quickly just ramble off the patron producers because they do help the show. God bless them. So episode 337 is brought to you by Battle Cry Brief. I'm being bronzed by Buhal Walshin, Rex Zane, Follow Melon Sugar High, I am DRW brother, Adam L, Ice MJL, Fire Element 6, and AK. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Chris, for coming on the show as well.
My pleasure. So,
where do we want to go? We did talk kind of like lay of the land, how things are going, money, all that good stuff. We could talk about some of the games. We could talk a little bit about Venture, where they may fit within some things. I definitely would love to get your thoughts on that. I would also love to, you know, Yiska did just have an interview with Gunba, and he had some very interesting remarks about how the system is being run with Face It coming in. Maybe even, you know, picking your brain on some of the admins. So, you know, I'll catch, you know, throw you the wild card. Where do you want to go? What do you want to talk about, Chris?
I mean, we can talk about the games. Obviously, I don't have too much positive to say about them.
Fair. All right, games.
People want to hear a little bit about that.
Sure.
Obviously, didn't go, you know, the way you wanted. Like, were you ultimately like shooting, you know, I feel like, you know, we talked enough that I feel like you probably were shooting for the win. You know, you wanted to go all the way. What was it prior to, you know, jumping into the call? I was kind of skimming through some of the games, and it felt to me, at least, like all of these like big last minute patches really kind of shook things up for everybody. But it felt like it hit you guys kind of hard. Is that like a fair assessment?
Objectively, yes, but I also think we can't really use the patch as much.
Sure,
as
of course,
an
excuse. I know. I get that.
I think when everybody was on the Mauga sim comp, it felt internally that we didn't lose a scrim actually, like for the last few weeks. So internally, like we felt very, very comfortable on that comp, and we were really confident. And then obviously, because the establishment, like the Avros and the Jakes and the Custers. Cried out that Mauga was unbearably boring, and the establishment took us down again and got him nerfed, and then that kind of left us. Like, I mean, I don't think I've ever had it where I've had 2 days before the tournament, like the playoffs, where there's a patch that might be like a new one. I don't complain because I live in the real world, so I understand Blizzard does not give a single crap about us, so we are just gonna have to get used to it. But it definitely feels like going from like a sim meta to a tracer meta is one that probably favors other teams slightly more than us. And it kind of left us in a horrible situation where we weren't quite sure, do we stick with the Mauga? Can it still work? Or is there something else better? But I don't think that the patch was even like in the, I don't think it was even 50% of the reason why we lost, you know?
Okay. You did kind of like hit on one of the big, like, not sore points, but one of the like the more stylistic things, looking at, you know, SSG and looking at teams like Twisted Minds and Ents, and obviously two, you know, very different Tracer players. But I felt as though that Psycho was, and especially in those first couple maps, very like tied to Hottie. Was that by design, or was that just an uncomfortability in like the macro scheme of things. Like, was it he was supposed to be around the Orisa at all times? It felt as though that like the pre-fight setups just weren't there, and it was just kind of a lot of like standing around and waiting for like Sparker to like hit something or for Hottie to like, hit like a charge. Like,
you're exactly right. I think one of the things of Soja meta is it does end up being quite slow and wait for Soja in general. But we actually had 0 minutes on Orisa in scrim, so we were totally not involved in wanting to play Orisa at all. Like, we were very like wanting to play Mauga, and we wanted to play Dive. And we felt that for whatever reason, with the level that we were playing, the Mauga could no longer beat the Orisa, or we lost. Like, I actually think it can, but I think one thing in esports, and maybe our team suffers from a little bit, is when we lose confidence in something, then you can't win. If you don't believe you can win, then you can't win. That's just a fact. So I think at some point we lost confidence in the Mauga. And then it does feel like if both teams are playing like Soja and Treya, so that the Orisa is just really reasonable on a lot of maps. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of like on Blizzard World just said, maybe just go Orisa. It just like feels like we're going to do it. And we obviously were winning the mirror. Like, ironically, I don't want to disrespect EXO because they literally beat me, but like I think we're comfortably like a better team than them. So like it does feel like if we got the mirror, even on a comps which we couldn't play, we could win. But in terms of like the macro, we went from having like a 20-page book on how to play Mauga in every ult situation to picking heroes, which like I guess like just the Orisa comp, which we had 0 hours on or 0 minutes in scrims on.
I think that's such a, anybody who's like actually going to go back and watch these games, I think you can see that literally from map to map. You look at control and like how you guys were like playing the objective, using your TPs with the Mauga to like get behind them, force movement cooldowns, and then jump on. I think it was on Night Market, like one of the second few fights, like really well executed set plays. And then you go into Blizzard World, which, you know, credit to both teams. I wouldn't want to attack that point with Winston into Orisa. That seemed like the Pain Olympics, and you were cosplaying as the Jar. That seemed really fucking painful. And then obviously getting into like Flashpoint deeper in it, it just felt as though you entered with Mauga. There was that comfortability, and then it just kind of slowly got away from you. Was that just more of like, okay, we need to like tighten it down, we need to find stuff that works, do you guys feel like you want to play Orisa? Cool, let's just do that. Was it kind of just like a little bit loose?
For sure. I mean, I think to be fair, like if the series was played on the Orisa mirror, we would win the series, I think. But they obviously, like, their coaches were very, very good about like recognizing where the team could win and just always picking a different hero to just like kind of like force us to catch up to them. They played the swap game like way better than us. And obviously we just like had the world's biggest throw in Esperanca, like quite unfathomable to lose that map. But like I think the reality is like if you win the map 5 versus EXO, if you're going to map 5 versus EXO, you're not beating Ents or TM anyway. So actually the level we were going to need to be at to win this tournament, we needed to be like way higher than what it was. Sure. Even if we didn't throw an Esperanca, unless we came in the next day with like a different like mindset, or maybe because we would have played TM, it's better because we always like seem to do well against TM. But we like the level we were showing in our like tournament games was nowhere near high enough to win that tournament last weekend.
That's actually something that Gamba said, that he thought like you had a very good chance winning against TM.
Yeah, we actually like almost have never lost a scrim to them. Like actually maybe literally never. They really don't like playing against Dive, and we were pretty committed to the Dive this stage. So we felt like we had like a really, really good matchup against them. Like our scrims for most of the season went, we would always lose to Ents. Ents would always lose to TM, and we would always beat TM. So the way that this double elim bracket was going to go was one team was going to get favored because like they weren't going to have to play against their nemesis, you know?
Yeah.
But like what ended up happening was like the last week we like played Ents and TM, and we felt like we were like comfortably beating them both, especially on like that Mauga patch. But yeah, I think for us there was an element somewhere of a mindset. We've never had to play from like as the favorites in our heads before. Like we've always been able to do quite a nice underdog story, right? Because London was just always an underdog story. Like even stage season 2, we'd lost so many games that we put ourselves back into the underdog where everyone thought we were terrible again. And it's easy to play from that state of mind in terms of, oh, everyone expects us to lose. So if we lose, no one's going to say anything. So let's just go out there and see what happens. And when you're now on the other side of it, where maybe it's like, oh, Atlanta, when they played against us in playoffs, it's like, oh, if we lose this, this is like so embarrassing. We're first seed and we're going to get knocked out by these like guys that play Reinhardt. Like, that's a really difficult place where you have to like, you have to approach it from like a mental standpoint differently. And I think that's what we've kind of spoke about in terms of like, we really, really want to change that like aspect of our mindset. Because I think you're right, like ultimately a lot of the fights we were just playing so slow, we were playing not to lose because we felt like we were the better team. So as long as I don't make a mistake, we win. Whereas I think what needs to happen at the highest level is even if you are the better team, you need to prove you're the better team, you know, and you have to at least like attempt to put some pressure on your opponents.
A lot of the notes were just like all caps, like proactivity, let's do something. Like on control, it felt like we were just playing the objective, you know, we're forcing them into acting against you instead of like going after it, like getting just like starting a fight rather than just kind of sitting around. So I think, I guess when you talk about mentality, is that something that you, how do you approach that? When it comes to like coaching for you, is that something that you feel like it can be more mechanical when it comes to like what compositions that you're running? Or is that something that you feel like you can kind of inspire in the players themselves, not necessarily like having to change what you're doing? You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing for us. Like, we clearly don't need to change too much because like in London, like season two, or like, I guess like season six, we were losing every scrim and then we were losing every official. So, okay, we were just bad. Like, that was just like the objective truth. Whereas for us, it's like, if we throw everything out, if we throw the baby out with the bathwater, as they say, like, we're going to also throw away what is clearly a good system, which is working like very consistently in practice. What we obviously need to do, and I think when we spoke as a team, I think most of the team were on like a pretty similar page where we feel like, yeah, I actually agree. Like, I actually felt like we were just too passive. We were too scared to like go out there and win. And we want to kind of like change that. We've like maybe spoke about like one or two things like internally that we want to change in terms of like mindset or leadership. But for us, like, there isn't like a need to radically change things because I think like our level as a team is high enough and was high enough to win the tournament. But it just wasn't on that weekend.
Yep. Is that... I kind of spoke to Yisk about this real fast. Not to completely squeeze you for juice, but is the thing that you guys spoke about internally when it comes to leadership, I have this funny feeling that as we kind of regress in terms of Overwatch and we get back into that, like, you know, grassroots stuff, did the word or phrase or term of IGL come up at all? Is there like a restructuring of leadership? Is there a restructuring of the comms kind of happening?
Yeah, a little bit, I think. We will try to give like one or two people a little bit more responsibilities. The way our thing was working before is everyone was quite comfortable calling, so everybody did call. But I think that when anyone can call, when the pressure's on, everyone can also not call because it's not my job. Whereas I think sometimes if you give people... you're calling, if they don't call in officials, then everyone can at least vaguely abuse them or something, you know?
There's this like psychological trap that I feel like, I don't remember where I heard it from. It might have been Oprah, forgive me. Don't ask me why the fuck I was watching Oprah as a child, but there's this like idea that like when you're on the street and somebody is injured or like somebody's like fainting. Thank you. I knew there was a word for it. But yeah, there is this like big era of like bystander effect happening that like if everybody's calling, then sometimes nobody can call because everybody's just assuming that it's somebody else's job. So yeah, I think it, yeah, I love it. Love it, love it, love it. Yes, what were you going to say? Sorry.
Did you try Ryan?
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. it's also not necessary. I don't think we need to play Ryan at all. I think the way Blizzard of like since Overwatch 2, the way Blizzard have fundamentally designed tank heroes is they don't give them shields and they don't give them mobility and they don't give them CC, so they just make them like walking stats. And Ram is a very difficult matchup for Ryan. Orisa, obviously, as we learned in playoffs, is very difficult for Ryan, and I think Malga is very difficult for Ryan because like these heroes want to do the same job as Ryan, but they're just they weren't invented 6 years ago. They were invented after the power creep, right? So they just find themselves like substantially stronger, doing very, very similar things to Reinhardt.
Had you experimented around with cheesing it like TM did with RAM?
No. We went into the end game thinking our strategy was good enough to win. Like we really, really, really felt like it. And we definitely didn't go into the EXO game thinking that we needed to change anything. We just like, fuck, we just need to play better than we did against Ents and we'll be okay. You know, again, like our scrim results against EXO are one where we didn't feel like we needed to cheese or to do like a plan B. Like we really felt like our plan A, but we had two plans. We had plan A and plan B, but we really felt like both of them were in a good spot. Even now, if you go back, especially against X, there's no way I'm playing RAM against them, you know? Like, I think I just think the comps and stuff we had were okay. We just needed to play them with, like, a little bit more aggression and with, like, the attitude of wanting to win as opposed to not wanting to lose, maybe.
One thing that sucked with me that Gamba said, and maybe I'm hopefully not misquoting, but I think he said the established consensus is that Morga is the counter to RAM. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I fully agree. I mean, I was in the Twitch chat while everyone was flaming Gumba, and I was like, yeah, you guys are all absolutely dumb. Like, I think I might have tried to do it slightly differently. Like, I think that instead of playing the same, I think that there was like a Mauga Tracer version, yes, which would have worked. But no one had really tried that. But 100%, like, the way Mauga's kit is designed to get past like heroes that can block headshots whilst having like a really good consistent way to get like behind the RAM so we can't block any damage at all. I think we actually exist right now in a game of Overwatch where like the rock paper scissors counter swap is so impactful. Like Orisa loses to RAM probably like, and these are all like 60-40s. Like, there's no such thing as like a hard counter, I think. But like, I think like Mauga beats RAM, RAM beats Orisa, Orisa beats Mauga, and then maybe like dive tanks also like figure out a way to be in there somewhere. But until the next patch, it feels like that's how it is.
I think Gamba also said you guys could have just dived it out and probably won on, you know, class and better ability.
We internally, our dive almost never failed across like 2 months of scrimming, like really, really high win rate on dive. I think the comp which we struggled the most was Orisa, Tracer, Sojin, because that was effectively the same comp we're playing, but just with a different tank. So it felt like when teams played like the Mauga comp or the Ram comp, they play like very, very tight. So it was quite easy to figure out a way to like dive into it. Whereas like a team that plays a little bit more like wide, but with just like a super overtuned horse in the front line, I think was like slightly more difficult for us to figure out. But I think we could have won it on dive. I think for sure we were like the best dive team, and we really, really felt like dive was in a decent place, but not with how we played it, I think.
Did you watch WAC against Falcons?
Yeah. I think I have a lot of comments to talk about the Korea region in general. Yeah, I think those teams.
How much worse are you guys?
Good. I think that Korea are good, and they actually have like a pretty good meta read, but they're also like the coaching or like the strategical element in Korea is really terrible right now. Teams are just so mirrored to just like, let's just play the mirror matchup and right, then just lose 0-3 and go home. Whereas what the EU teams do, I don't think the NA teams do it either, but like the EU teams, and this is, I think, largely because like, I'm not going to say that actually, because that's not who I am. But I do think that like the EU coaches in general for the top four teams are very realistic in terms of like we can win or we can't win on this matchup. And like even TM, which doesn't have a coach, realized that they couldn't win on what they'd scrimmed, which was Mauga, so they went to a plan B. EXO realized they couldn't win the dive mirror, which is what we'd scrimmed, so they went to a plan B. We had to go to a plan B. Ents at some point had to push plan B. All of the EU teams, especially, or at least strategically, are making decisions which allow them to win. Whereas too many times do I see like Genesis just play, oh, it's Hollywood, so we're going to play double flex. It doesn't matter that we're playing against WAC. This is our double flex map, and just lose. And without any like attempt to strategically get their way through the series, you know?
Yep.
So what you're saying is Western coaches are better than Korean coaches right now?
At least it's strategy, 100%.
Thank you for maybe in terms, the title.
Yeah, at least in terms of how the comps are played, it's really possible that the Korean coaches are still very good. But there are some decisions I see teams make, and I'm saying you just give your team 0% chance to win this series from day one.
Yep. It feels like it's such a hard thing to break, and it was obviously like very apparent during like the GOATS era of the game, where everybody was just like, yeah, we're shit at GOATS, but it's all you can play, so I guess we suck. Since like we don't want to try to like think about it a little bit. We don't want to try to strat. We don't want to try Sombra. We don't even want to try like the DPS stuff, even though like, yeah, it's also like a catch 22 for the coaches, because like how are you gonna get the players to buy into like doing shit that like isn't proven, you know what I mean? Like that's always like a really difficult thing that I think like the public doesn't realize, is that like you can't, this isn't just like some authoritarian government structure most of the time where the coach is just telling the players what to do and you just do it without any questions asked. Like they have like a lot of input, so it's difficult, but ultimately that's kind of the only logical way that you're ever going to find what's going to work for you, or find a style, or improve in some sense. That, you know, you have to strat a little bit, you know, you have to think about the game. And just mirroring, I feel like, is just every time I watch these games, and it's not just Korea, I feel like it's just Overwatch in general. It's just like a surrender flag pops up every time I just watch a team just like go mirror, and it's like, is this really the point to do it? Or could you have changed something with the comp that you were running? Is there like a chess piece to move, a resource to change?
See, some people play six pools. Others want to play the macro game and win honorably, okay?
Listen, what I do and what I think should be done, two very different things. Don't, you know, it's the age-old parental do as I say, not as I do, okay? Like, what I do and what you do, you know, what should be done, very different things.
Like, far from it be it for me to, like, pass on an opportunity to say something inflammatory here, but I think the thing is, there's a very high chance that if you were like, if the regions the best teams were to play tomorrow, Western regions wouldn't get a map, and it would still not mean that Chris is incorrect.
Yeah, of course.
In that the level of player might just be. And the fucking like distilled crackedness, like none of these top teams realistically would have been allowed in Overwatch League. Like we had super teams, but never to the degree of Falcons, I feel like. Like every super team you had, you still were like, is that guy actually top five? Maybe not. You know, like even Atlanta, you would say like the tank was, you know, not the best player that you could have. I don't think that's true for Titans at all. I think they just like legitimately have top three players in every single position at the moment. And it's still interesting to see that they lost against WAC, but that might just be the breeding ground for Chris's argument to hold true, which is there is something. Either it's like an honor thing and a handshake agreement, because ultimately the game also, in fairness, didn't matter, right? Like, both of those guys were qualified. Both of those guys kind of had everything locked in. So maybe they didn't want to necessarily do their best. But yes, like, there's a weird tendency. And maybe it's a long-term strategy in terms of, like, just, like, honing these strategies that work. And maybe it's the dominant strategy. But yeah, I'll let Chris defend that take here.
No, I don't know. I also think I'm obviously biased, but I really think the EU teams will play the Korean teams way closer than you think. Way closer than you think. I don't know. I don't experience it, so maybe when we eventually get to these lands, if I'm lucky enough to qualify for them. Obviously, it's really stupid for me to come here and talk shit about Korean teams when I can't even break top four Europe. but yeah, I don't know. I look at them and I think, like, would a team like Ents with Gumba, like, are they gonna just mirror like Falcons dive, or are they going to make Falcons earn the win? And I don't know, like the same way that we knocked out Atlanta, man, by doing the same thing, by making them like beat our version
Answer
of a cup, you know, like team career at the World Cup. Like, if you want to tell me, oh, like Sparkle wasn't as good as who they could have got, yeah, fair enough. But Rush and the team career, they have misread the meta so hard that all doing that tournament was just mirror China. Like, again, like Atlanta just mirrored Spark. Team Korea just mirrored China on the only comp which China can play, and they play at like just an unbelievable level. Then Team Korea went and played Finland and just mirrored the Sigma comp. And it's like, ah, fuck, you guys are like so like far behind, like on a strategic level, that you're just doing what, ironically, what we had to do against EXO, which is just we missed it so much that we just had to mirror and hope we could outskill, you know? But I think coaching, I think largely through how Gumba won this season, I think I would like to give myself some credit for like being one of the first coaches like on London to kind of like do against the grain, like consistently like go against the meta. I think that more and more Overwatch has been shown that if you have like a smart strategic mind, you don't have to play like the five heroes that everyone plays and just hope that you play them better than the opponents. Like, there is a way to win via throwing them off or countering or swapping or something like that, you know?
I think what we are observing is just maybe a comfort zone, because like that level of just like honing one comp is just so ingrained in that community and like was so fit for so long in Overwatch League, right? Like,
sure.
And that's also where a lot of these players have their roots, and it's probably something that they feel comfortable on. But yeah, I genuinely just don't. Once again, like, I'm just like warning against. Yes, you will. You might get punched in the mouth at international events, but the criticism towards this monoculture, and it's not everyone in this region, I will also say. Like, on the day that they mirrored Winston dives, there were a bunch of teams playing Orisa. There were a bunch of teams playing Wonga. Right? Yeah. Like, it's. But specifically, like, for these big teams, maybe it's a feature of that game not mattering, but like, yes, historically, like I feel like Chris has a point in terms of handshaking into this weird honor matchup where and maybe it's an ego thing, maybe it's a perception thing, but at the end of the day, it's about winning games, and if you gamble an Overwatch League championship away doing so, that's on you, right?
I'm sure I watched it the other week, and it was like Genesis, who like had like one win and needed to win, versus WAC. And I remember they played the same comp on map one, and map two was Hollywood. And I just remember both teams do this thing, which like I felt like all the Korean teams were doing at that moment, where they just subbed in Kalios and they just play BAP Brig Mirror, because Hollywood is a BAP Brig map in Korea. And I just remember watching it, and I'm like, if you're playing against WAC, who like on double flex, like Chorong Shu is like so hard to beat. Maybe it was a different team than Genesis. I'm sure it was like recently, but there was some game that was, and I just remember like what chance do you have to win if you just like you go in from like day one and just mirror like what's clearly the best double flex team that's been playing double flex since day one? And yeah, I don't know. I just look at that and I think you just give yourself no chance here.
It feels like the same shit, and not to get completely, like, not to date myself completely, but, you know, like, when you look at, like, especially older, like, StarCraft II history, where it's like, the Koreans are going to come over, you're not going to beat them in a macro game. You're not going to go the distance and just have as good a hands as them. So you have to, yeah, like you're saying, you have to find a way to win. Like, if you want to advance past this person, and you know, like, you be, you know, reasonable with yourself, you're, you know, not going to be as good as them at these things or that thing, or, you know, microing here or, you know, macroing there. So how, you know, I'm not saying that everybody needs to, you know, get on their cheese pants and, you know, get down to the farmer's market and get some Gouda, but like, let's think a little bit, you know, like I feel like this game is so rife to have so many interesting little like swaps and like stylist things. And I thought that was what was so beautiful last year, and not to completely glaze you, but like with your team and like what Mayhem did, I feel like all season they were so like particular about like the different little looks they would play, like Ryan on like Numbani A, and like, what the fuck are you doing that? But it kind of worked, and like there was thought behind it, and like that's what I feel like is like fun about Overwatch. But so often it just gets down to like the same boring ass shit. One team is ahead of the meta, like you said. The other team's a little bit behind. They just go, well, I don't know. We'll just mirror it. And then you just get a mirror match where like one team's obviously just a little bit more comfortable. The other team's kind of picking it up and you just lose.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that one thing that came to mind with all of the Mauga controversy, like 4 seconds into him being picked into a competitive game, was everyone's like, oh, it's so boring. But I feel somewhere that like the true, like, I actually think that anyone who thinks like Orisa is exciting and Mauga is boring, I think you just...
That's the same, like, yeah.
It's the same. If you think like, oh, good thing it's a Ranmer and not a Mauga, like, I think they're just like tweeting for interactions because they know the community wants to negatively like talk about Mauga. But I feel like what's exciting about Overwatch is 9 times out of 10, not the same 5 heroes on both teams, you know?
Yeah.
And if hero bans or something does come down the line, I think that at least that might solve that problem, because I love these people that like sit on Twitter and like smell their own farts and talk about how I love watching Doomfist Echo, like it's so exciting watching these heroes, but fuck me, try and watch that comp, it's so hard. Yeah. Like everybody's TPing over, oh look at the, we're gonna have Jake on the podcast hopefully soon, and I'm gonna argue with him about this because he's one of these people who, oh, I just want like pop off heroes, it's the best for the game, and I'm like, ah, oh, like this idea that like all these like pop off heroes like make the game so enjoyable. Oh, Sojourn Tracer again. Yes. I haven't seen that for like the last 17 years, you know? Like I think when Overwatch is at its best is I found the grand finals of TM versus Ents incredibly engaging because there was clearly a strategical battle going on there where TM tried something new. The second map, Ents realized the counter, they tried the counter. Does Goomba stick for map 3 with the counter because the map was close, or does he try? And then there was like this like level up of both teams. Then at some point, then Goomba says, okay, we got it. We got a mirror. And then they mirror. The TM go for the mirror. On the attack, all of a sudden, TM now play the Mauga to counter the Ram. And there is this actual like strategic battle where two teams are swapping heroes. And I think, okay, that to me, there is storylines there. The desk and the casters must love that too, because all of a sudden, fuck, I've got something to talk about on the desk afterwards. I don't just have to talk about, yo, what an insane performance from Proper. You see all those headshots he hit? Like, whoa, look at that.
He's
like,
really okay, on it today, boys.
Yeah, it's actually like, oh, there was a decision here to mirror this comp, which maybe Goomba shouldn't have put Kev on Sim, even though there was like there was a reason to do it, you know?
Sure, of course.
And I think that's where Overwatch is at its best. And I think that, like, we should stop. I really want us to stop this kind of, like, hero racism, you know, where it's like, oh, this is one of the ugly, boring heroes, and this is one of the, I love these heroes. Like, these are the acceptable heroes to be meta for the 7th year in a row. And I want variety. Like, I want to, like, I want Mauga comp to be good for a while. I want, like, different heroes that we don't see to be good for different periods of time and just to kind of, like, keep it changing, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think that that is probably the most entertaining Overwatch. I get what Jake's saying, and I feel like, you know, it's very obvious that, like, you know, having high skill impact heroes is like fun for the viewer. They get obvious, you know, cues when they should be excited. It's cool when people pop off, but it's just like not, it's very messy. It's hard to watch. Like, yeah, cool. Like, I'm watching Chase pop up on Doomfist, and it's like, you know, okay, great. Like, what else is happening? I can't really conceptualize the fight so much. And maybe that's like a broadcast criticism, but yeah, I
think, okay, watch me be the centrist Andy, but I think, like, you need both. I think the strategic aspect and whatnot is cool down for those that love the pop-off heroes. And then you have the pop-off metas where it's the cooldown for those that love the strategic aspect. Because personally, dude, I loved watching Proud against Prophet on Widow Duels when those guys faced off. Probably the, like, maybe not the best, but yeah, maybe they might be the best in the region at the moment, but I think that's also part of Overwatch, the individual stories that you tell. Yeah. But you also can tell team stories, and in general, like, you have a demand of novelty, right? That you want to sort of hit. And, like, alternating these types of narratives, even told through the gameplay, is probably a good way to protect against fatigue. only
I feel, go on. Sorry. Like, you probably loved the Widow duel because, like, Widow is not seen very much, right?
Yes.
Whereas I can't imagine when you were watching Timeless versus M80 and we had two Arrestors and two Tracers and two Sojourns, and it was like Sojourn versus Pelican or whoever, the Hydron, right, who was playing it. I can't imagine, like, I feel like people are, like, slightly dishonest about it. Maybe it's because I just have such a warped perspective because I'm a coach, so what a surprise. The coach likes strategy over pop-off, right? But I just can't imagine for, like, the second year in a row watching two Sojourns just trade, oh, I've headshot him, now he's headshot me, back and forth. I just don't believe it actually changes people's heart rates, you know? You know what it's like? You ever been to an art exhibit in the museum?
Yes.
And you go with people and they're like, oh, I just love the colors here. You can see what is. It's all cap. Nobody actually believes that. It's fully lying. And I think that's what Overwatch is. When people say, oh, I love Tracer Sojourn, again, when you've seen it so many times, when a Tracer hits a pulse bomb, I honestly don't believe that people's heart rate changes. It's just they're like watching like the Van Gogh photo and like, oh, it's magnificent.
It's I've been told it's pretty.
Pulse bomb. Look how good I am. I love... That's what I believe, you know?
No, but maybe... you're the artist. That's the thing. You're the artist at the museum, and you're oh, look at the texture, and I wonder how like oh, the how did they do this? And like Chris, you're the artist.
It's kind of like porn, okay? Like you get like if you don't have enough cooldown, you need more extreme shit, and then eventually like I just need to see I don't know like Stalker pulse bomb a Tracer after the third blink, okay? That's the shit that gets me off. But I don't know if there's much after that, right? Like, I'm feeling like I gotta switch genres at some point. And I agree, but then again, I could also not see just, like, you know, fucking Ryan mirrors just bashing into each other forever again, right? Like...
But that's it. But this is the point. What you're saying is you would hate to watch a Ryan mirror for an extended period of time. And you would hate to see this. And what I'm saying is you're right. But why if it's Mauga mirror? And by the way, Avril on the establishment. He was tweeting that Mauga was boring 30 seconds into the first round of him being played. And that was enough for him to tweet that 30 seconds was all it took, you know? And it's like, surely... Mauga would be boring if we watched it for months.
Yeah, sure. I agree. Yeah.
Why is Tracer Sojourn for like the second year, like since Sojourn, why is that just acceptable to be? Why is that not boring to people? Because fuck, I've seen Sojourn metas before. Both teams have to play. Please don't peek the rail. Please don't peek the rail. And the better Sojourn wins the series. It happened in Playoffs 22. It happened in Junker Queen meta. In all of these metas, that's just what happened, you know? I don't know. Like, I feel like at some point, I would just love variety, you know? Ugly heroes.
Would you say the same thing if you had gotten Kai Kefster?
I could be biased because I have a really good Sojourn Tracer player.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, I feel like it's when I remember there was just like one moment I was watching the M80 game and it was just two Arisas and two Sojourns and it was Coliseo first fight and I'm thinking, nobody's going to tweet about how fucking boring. No one's going to tweet about how boring this is. But when my mate Mauge, who, by the way, a hot take, takes way more skill than Arisa and Ram, 100% fact. If you understand the game.
Yes, yeah.
Everyone tweets about how shit Mauga is, and people just watch two Arisas spin each other in the Coliseum while waiting for the Sojourn to hit a headshot and pretend that this is enjoyable. That's what I think.
Look, I think you, like, the way I perceived the discourse around the M80 game was really not, like, going like, oh, the Sojourn. It was more like, ha.
Hydron is getting shit on.
Yeah, because Hydron is one of those rare players that decided to have a personality in the esports Overwatch, and unfortunately fell victim to the fact that these really, really nice people in the Overwatch community are actually quite fucking horrible.
Look, but like, once again, I will say that you kind of need that guy, like, to be hated. It, like, he just has to play through it. I know it's, like, not fair.
Yeah,
but, like,
I know. It just, you kind of feel like there is this like causation of when, if like you see Hydron, I don't even know what Hydron did to get so much hate. I feel like he just like, it just has like a bit of personality. I don't know. Yeah. There must have been a moment that I've missed that he did to turn the world against him.
I think it's as soon as like one, every carry AD or almost every carry DPS player has an eagle, right? It's like if you go into the fucking angle and challenge someone and you don't think you're the best player in the world, you're playing the fucking game wrong, okay? Everyone in every FPS title forever will tell you exactly that. So, of course, someone that wants to compete at the top and like has proven to some degree, at least at some level, especially because he went through that period of like just owning for years in contenders, like, of course, there's a bit of ego, and that bit of ego is fun as well. Like, I fucking hate, I hope it doesn't happen, but because it sounded like he's retiring on his stream, I hope he doesn't let that shit get to him too much. Like, he should just fucking play through that shit and then come back and just slap, right? Like, it's, but that's also, and that's also where I have to put the blame a little bit on the players and coaches. Part of sports is having, like, you know, a punching bag. You gotta have one, right? And like, sometimes it's you, and then it sucks. But you gotta play through it, right? That's part of the experience. Like, it's also you. I think the mental model that always helped me when that happens, when OG tries to cancel my career, is like I have to realize that these are guys. Is this the equivalent of guys in the pub watching an England game, getting drunk and chatting shit and saying like, oh, it's so obvious. What the fuck? How did we not? Like, that's the level of discourse, right?
Yeah, I always think like, imagine if Cristiano Ronaldo went home after a loss and read his Twitter replies, you know? Like, it would be way worse than Ethan Hydron does. But I think at a level of sports, there is this understanding that we need the passionate fans to drive the game, but passionate fans are also unbelievably stupid. And like, we like rely on them, but also we really, really hate them.
Can't stand
them. And it feels like the way that esports works is, it feels like the level of disconnect from me at the pub and Cristiano Ronaldo is, there's a big enough distance, but it feels like if you're a Reddit commenter or Twitter, you're just about close enough to where you can actually I remember reading, I had an incident over one of my Twitter followings many years ago. Maybe you remember such an incident. I remember comments on Reddit threads that were like, Christopher is a known misogynist. Christopher is a known racist. Like, Christopher is a known horrible person. And I'm like, fuck, dude. Like, it's so close. Like, this person, like, this is like an actual human being in theory. That's like, that's writing this stuff about me. And it's like, it's so hard to not let like that get in, because I'm like, well, I didn't do anything. I just I haven't done, like, one has had a bad interaction with me, but I'm like known as an evil person.
Look, and I feel like there's a title of the creator meme in here, right? Like, just walk away. But I will say, the percentage of ownership level people that read that shit was fucking psychotic. Okay.
Yep.
Like, you could not ignore the discourse, because you're the guy that pays your salary, probably read that shit. I'm not sure if that's true for the teams that you were in, but they were definitely like even the unlikely owner reading that shit and going like, is my coach smart by not playing what the Redditor says they should be playing? It's wild that like there was legitimate impact. I also for a while, and then I just turned into an apathetic, bad person. But, like, for a while, I was in the trenches and catching fucking, like, trying to die on hills and whatnot. Because I knew, like, some guys just reading that shit. Are. And then, it's not as bad anymore.
Not like, as bad. No, that's very fair. You have improved. There has been some character growth. That's fair.
The amount of, like, messages I throw away and just say, you know, they deserve each other.
I had one in my, it's still in my drafts. It was like this latest element of like awkward drama. I was so close to just sending it, you know?
And I'm like, you just gotta write it out. You just gotta get it out of the head.
Just don't do it.
Nope.
Yeah. It's
not worth it.
But then again, like it feels important to be able to separate the public persona, the gestalt, if you want, of what everyone else thinks you are and what you actually are, right? Yep. And yes, the that distance is uncomfortably close, especially like if you're streaming and you're giving a lot of away from you, and like maybe they see your mom coming in giving you your attendees and whatnot. Like it just feels a little, feels a little bit more personal. But
yeah, it does.
It's still like there's a healthy distance, and in some way there's some parasocial aspect. And I will also say, sometimes you just gotta look at your own like behavior, and actually sometimes they have a point, right? Like sometimes you did some shit, and you gotta like reconsider some points. And I personally have definitely taken that to account, especially like when it comes to giving away too much information in petty. I get frustrated if I'm in an argument where I know I'm right, but the reason I know I'm right is because of internal information that I cannot disclose feasibly.
Right.
Because I also do not have the... I have knowledge enough to believe that it's true. I do not have report that out knowledge of that factor, right? It would need way more, almost scientific knowledge of that, right? And I think I got better and had to necessarily just like realize, yeah, they have a point. Like they are arguing actually not that stupidly with me. They cannot know, right?
Given what they know,
from their point of view. Yeah.
Like there is a knowledge gap there that has to be considered. And yes, I know it hurts that A, you cannot say it, and B, they do not realize that there is one. But like sometimes it's honestly like actually relatively sane people arguing a good point with the information that they have.
Hmm.
But sometimes, dude. Sometimes. Oh, what did I see today? Let me think about this.
Something about the World Cup.
Oh, you guys being higher ranked than other teams in some Elo model, because you actually had a really hard strength of schedule throughout your events. So therefore, you're the fourth place team, but you're ahead in Elo of the third place teams in both other Western regions. It's like, oh, this is biased. No, this is math. you guys played some heavy hitters, right? Like on your way there.
I mean, we played, that was the third time we played EXO, and we beat them the first two. So like that was like
right.
They obviously won when it mattered, but it wasn't like the first time that we'd had to play them.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that's another thing. Like that you, we will never get it into American heads that. You know, like just going deep in a playoff event does not actually
true.
Much about the, you know, the how the entire year went.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just like that's something that I hope we get in Overwatch, but I feel like I appreciate a lot in like a lot of other esports is that like you applaud like top eight finishes, you know, like finding some kind of like arbitrary like yeah, you didn't win the ring, they didn't get the chip. But like they're really good, you know what I mean? Like I think we severely underrate like the difficulty and the like esteem of like hitting a podium. Like that's something to be applauded. It's not as big, but like that's something really really good and should be appreciated.
I think it's not enough competitions just yet. If you get
fair,
one or
yeah.
two more, I think we can feasibly think about getting something like a rating system going for Overwatch as well,
yeah.
where we aggregate and like, you know, like this HLTV rating for CS, having something like that for Overwatch, getting a smart Excel wizard on the Elo calculations of that.
And it'll never be perfect, but it'll be something that we can latch onto, you know?
It'll be easier too now that this like Face It League is out, because I think that is going to be like a lot of games every week. So you're actually going to get like very, very, like between OWCS and the Face It League, it feels like you're going to have... Some weeks you're going to have like as many as like three or four games. Like there's going to be like a lot of like these teams playing against each other. So I think you can probably build quite a good like system that'll help with that.
Is that too much competition?
Nope.
Based.
You see no burnout risk or anything?
Nope, not at all. 100% not. The way that the format works right now is the Swiss stage is almost not a competition for the good teams anyway, because like an 8 out of 9 games, you're just like, I think Unta put it like clubbing on gold players, I think is what he said. and then largely the groups, there will at some point the way the Swiss stage will go is it'll make a group of death like by default, but so far the groups have been quite easy for everyone to get out of. So realistically you only get one weekend where you get like the really big game. So I actually think having other games in and around that is really, really fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Go on. Ultimately, within regards to the Swiss stages, as we, you know, maybe even look to next year, maybe as far as, I don't know if this is something in the rulebook that's been established, but surely they don't just make you club on a bunch of golds every stage, right? Like they're just like,
oh no, I think so.
That's nuts.
For OWCS or for
OWCS?
Yes.
Yeah. OWCS.
Do you just have to repeat the Swiss every? That I think that's a little silly. I feel like I assume that this was like establishing like the hierarchy of things, and then going into either next stage or maybe even next year, like you wouldn't have to sit there and go through the Swiss again. Like you would just like the top 14.
I don't mind. Okay. The Swiss stage, you're gonna get at least one or two. Like we played against EXO and Ents in the Swiss stage, so we got like two good games. Yeah. I think it's good practice. It's like good to play against them. I think, you know, the open system is one which is objectively good, and I think with an open system comes having to prove yourself so I think the system is okay.
By the way, clubbing golds is like a fun expression, especially because like after Dante left Gladiators, it's sort of like what Gladiators became, right? And like every time you kill Yakiel, a couple of gold points, your coins popped out up from his inflated salary.
How did the in joke from Uncoachables bleed over here? You just brought the luggage with you?
Are we doing a quiz?
look, I theoretically have the receipts for a client of the week.
Oh. I love it.
I don't know how to let me send you the screenshot and you tell me if it's kosher to do that. Let me work on that.
Client of the week, you gotta unleash yourself, you know. You always feel guilty doing it, but once you've made a few people clients, I think it's good, you know.
Well, you wouldn't like that you're the client in that case.
Yikes. Oh shit. Well then do it. Of course do it.
Yeah, the problem is okay. wait, let me send this to you. While I'm possibly content cuck everyone still listening.
Audio listeners, he's
you remember that
stroking,
one?
He's squeezing his hog right now, live on stream.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got it wrong. Like, yeah, I mean, you could do that one. Like, for sure, it's okay. Okay. I get it wrong all the time.
So, do you want me to do it now, or should we do it in the end, Joe?
Yeah, we're basically ending now. We can tail it off.
All right, let me figure out how I get this on my screen. Like,
Tech Wizardry. Here you go.
Wait.
He's doing it live.
Okay, we're doing this. And then... Why?
Audio listeners, he's squeezing his hog again.
How do I... Oh, this is really good that I...
I love that I'm painting the picture that you could be doing something unscrupulous and you're just, like, confused on how your own body works.
The problem is that this fucking program doesn't recognize the tool that I use for it. So
just read it!
No, you gotta see it.
You know? Oh my god.
So, wait, can I do this with this way? Sure.
All right, well, Yiska fumbles with his own penis. Chris, what do you think about Venture? Do you think they're any good? Do you think that it's like too hard to tell? It is kind of weird. It feels like it's like unplayable on vertical maps.
Nah, they'll be OP. 100%. That's what happens. Like, we've entered into the power creep era of Overwatch.
Okay, fair.
And minus a Life Weaver or two, I think every hero that comes out just 9 times out of 10 is pretty good. So I think Venture will be the same.
Huh. I like the idea that they're giving them like assisted like survivability with like the added like quick melee damage and like the shields that they get. I just feel like on like, granted, you know, some maps aren't just going to be in the map pool, but I feel like there's just some maps that Venture just can't work on. They feel too close range, and they feel like they don't have any vertical mobility, that they just kind of like get stuck behind a shield and
I saw some people today on Twitter like talking about the heroes mid. It's obvious, and it's like,
until
you know the numbers, like predicting a hero is like so unbelievably pointless.
A moot,
Just know they'll be OP. That's all you need to know.
Abuse them.
I got it. I am Boomer.
Always got it.
Should I show?
Yeah. Yes. Do it.
Unveil it. I'm full screening.
So this wasn't even the first time, or remotely the first time, we talked about your organization, but Chris forgot about his orc score despite it being on his jumper.
I literally went around for the first 2 weeks like telling my mom that I'm like on Starship Gaming, like, and I think it was another one where I was like Star Station or like spaceship gaming. Like, it actually took me so long to remember which two S letters went into the organization. Like, I think at one point my mom said to me, "Wait, is it Starship or Space Station? Who did he sign for?" And she was Googling Starship Gaming, which I think exists in some way or another. And so, yeah, thankfully they gave us it on the hoodie. So, and I just never can forget anymore.
Yeah. Space Nation. We never did a Space Nation, though. No. I feel like that's close.
I always knew it was the double S, but I mean, Starship, Space Station, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, SSG, you know, it fits the acronym.
You can see where I went wrong. Yeah, but I'm happy to claim Client of the Week. I think, you know, I've had it come in.
do you have a subject already planned out for Uncoachable? You don't have to say, but like, how long do you plan? Do you have bookmarks? Key blogs.
You mean for what? For just the next episode?
Yeah.
We're filming tomorrow morning, so hopefully it's been it's so difficult to book European, Australian, and someone from the West Coast.
Preach, brother.
When everyone is working full time jobs, it's unbelievably difficult. Yeah. And yeah, so we're going to try and get two in this week if we can, so that we can kind of like, because like it's like a less intense week. There's no like games and stuff. I think I'm going to like the tweet that I was going to do, I'm going to do it in Client of the Week. So I'm going to like try to really start some more drama there. So get ready for that.
Nice.
And I think tomorrow's episode is a good one. I think the one after will also, I think we got some, the good thing about taking a lot of time is I think you get like a lot of topics. So I think both are going to be some really solid episodes.
Can you say guess?
When does this one release?
Tomorrow. It'll be out probably tomorrow, yeah.
I think the plan is to do Gumba tomorrow, and then hopefully we're going to get Jake on if we can.
Mm.
And then Jake can like defend, like he can be the voice of the establishment, you know?
Where are you with Gumba right now? Like, I know you hated him in the past. You really got into it, hating him. And then you kind of made this...
I like him now. Like,
really?
I feel like we have like this. Like, sometimes with the way Gumba is, I see him and I think he's playing me. Like, he like talk to me about like strategies and stuff, and I'm like, nah, this fucker's like playing me, you know. But I think more or less, we're on good terms. I think that we're like we talk quite a bit. Sometimes you see like this like the side of him, like that he's also like this like delusional like people like the rest of us, you know. Sometimes I build Gumba up in my head as like this like psychopathic genius, but then sometimes I'm like, he was on like the X's co-stream and he was like talking about how when SSG beat us in a scrim, it was like Mickey Mouse, it was Kappa, they just played dive maps, of course they won. And I checked it and it was like King's Row and Lijiang were the maps who beat them on. And it's like, oh yeah, like Gumba is also like delusional in terms of like he gaslights himself into thinking, oh, we lost this scrim, but it didn't matter, the same way that every other coach does. Yeah. So I didn't see the human side of him, but I think, I like the guy now.
I see, like, the social engineering that he does on you in order for you to feel not negatively against him after he 3-0 stomped you guys is S tier.
That's it, yeah. I'll get him next time.
What do you think about his move to basically, like, once again, like, it's not even that he just shoots his own players behind the barn. He now takes out entire teams and buries them deep.
True.
And actually, you guys actually benefit from that. You're currently ahead in points, I think.
Yeah.
They do have I think they played their 2 DPS or 3 DPS players, all of them, so they all got points. But yeah, eventually it won't matter, yeah.
But I think that, like, I think we're still ahead of them because unless Kuki or Shockwave play tank, their core roster is not going to have those players in. So I think the way that Correct. The core roster stuff works means that I think we are ahead of them. I mean, it's just like, it's absolute classic Gumba, you know? Like, that's just like, he just is what he is, you know? Like, he literally messaged me like 5 minutes after he got knocked out of the TM game asking me when we're scrimming again, you know? Like, they're like the meme about, like, the second things are over, he books scrims. It's actually like what he does. And I think that, like, yeah, for me, like, there is clearly a way to manipulate. Like, it does feel like, imagine if Toronto decided that they thought what Timeless was doing was good. They could just steal two players and just kill Timeless, like, in the streets, and there's, like, nothing anyone could do about it. And it feels like the people that are going to do that will be Gumba, you know? And I expect when he can, he's going to look to, like, make those moves more often. It's almost like, I feel like it's funny, you know, because, like, Team Finland, like, the Cloudy vs. Ghost Massa, they're chickens, you know, and Gumba is a fox, and let's get the fox in the hen house and let's have some fun. But slowly Gumba's just killing them one by one, you know. Ghost benched, Sauna off the team, Vess now kicked too. Like, those poor Finnish guys, they got him in and he just slowly bit by bit clubbed them to death, you know. So you know, they might have got second players, but the power
for,
of friendship.
For a new mutiny. One might say.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, at some point, if they're tight and there's, like, the org is finished, you never know, like, there's only so much trust they can have in a guy that's consistently killing your best friends, you know?
I mean, as long as you win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. But they have one fourth place team and and everyone's, like, on the bench all of the
Finnish. Who are you going to celebrate the win with, you know? I don't know.
Then the Finnish org is going to be like, oh, why are we doing this? Then we'll see, you know?
Sully Kalix is your main support going to EWC with you instead of Massa, you know? You never know.
Yeah, that's it. I'm just glad that we've got contracts, you know, so that we've got the gates bolted up so when the fox comes sniffing, he can't get in.
I think he will, like, probably just, like, take everyone else out, right? Like, it's... I you better hope some other organization soon comes in order to shut this down with contracts, because... Otherwise, like, but I get it. Like, if it serves a functional purpose in that case.
Well, it's like, A, they upgrade the roster in a way, at least, and they take out some potential competition along the way. Like, it feels hard to blame him, you know?
No. Yeah. He's playing the rules.
Have you thought about doing anything like this? Maybe because you need someone in any position or something?
The only thing I think is that if there is a world where hero bans come in, I think that I want to be quick to jump on certain players, like, to keep our roster. Like, I feel like they're like that second flex support in Europe, if it's like Gala or whoever it is, I think they become really, really, like, everyone wants to jump on them if, like, hero bans becomes a thing.
Based on what information do you say that?
I don't know. Like, I just, the dev said it, like, do you not... You said something. No, you said something on one of your podcasts.
I think it's like it's definitely talked about, right? Like, that being a thing.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said about public figures saying something publicly about that at an interesting time in the game.
Yeah.
I think it will be interesting what kind of system will be applied. I think it's. What kind of system would you prefer? Would you prefer to start heavy-handed and then dial back, or start slow and then ramp up?
Yeah, me and my mate Gumba were theorycrafting it, like, literally last night, and it actually feels like hero bans is, like, so fundamentally flawed in terms of the first problem they've got is the Lucio problem, where it's like, if you ban Lucio, you also ban, like, seven other heroes out, like, and it feels like if you do a system where you're allowed to ban three heroes, I think I can, if I ban, like, Lucio, Tracer, Winston, I think you can't play Dive and I think you can't play Brawl. So actually what you're just going to get is, like, some sort of, like, Bap Zen or Bap Break, like Sigma Mirror, like, consistently, like, these, like, undiveable comps. So I don't know if the best way to do it is to do it where if you ban someone, the next map, they can't be banned again. So you can't, like, you can't ban for the series, you ban for the map. I don't know if the best is to just give teams one ban. I don't know if there is a system where if you ban a hero, like the other team also has to mirror the ban. Like, oh, you can't play Lucio, but we can unless you ban it. But then I also feel like Lucio is just like, I feel the problem is in every single situation I see hero bans, I see Lucio getting through zero times. Like there is more value for money ban than Lucio because of what he also takes out. And I also think that fundamentally, like if you, the only dive tank is Doomfist, I think Doomfist is too easy to counter by like a variety. Like you can't ban hitscan heroes because there's like six of them. You can't really ban like Ana, Bap, Zen because like they all kind of will function similarly. Like even though they're clearly different heroes, they'll function similarly in the archetype. So you can't ban them, but you take out Lucio and then you take out Winston and I think you take out Tracer and then I think dive is impossible. And I think Brawl is impossible. So I think either we need to do something where you like unironically make Lucio unbannable, which would feel so weird. Like it's like you can't really see a system where one hero is like gets like priority. Or I don't know. We were trying to figure it out and it actually feels like every version just ends up like people playing like slow Sigma comps or something.
You end up just playing like weird poke mirrors because all of the actually broken heroes that has ever actually pointed a finger at are finally being addressed, and you have to fundamentally think about the game so differently.
Yeah, I think what you would want is you'd want a support to come out immediately that is Lucio adjacent that also has some form of speed boost, you know. And if you do that, then I think that you can make like it would make Lucio less of a valuable ban, which would actually like mean that you would like go after specific like characters like that other teams can play. But it doesn't feel like at the pro level the game is balanced or designed in the way that I could see hero bans being like as successful as people would maybe imagine they would be.
Yeah, it just devolves into some real strange shit.
We are now in a godless world where the developer doesn't have that much godly powers, right? You can just say, as a tournament organizer, we don't let you ban Lucio.
They could. It just feels weird, right?
Just a real
it just
weird
feels
thing
so like aesthetically weird, I think.
Right.
But you could do it if that's what we wanted.
You could also say like you have one ban protection and then the handshake agreement is that
Everybody just protects Lucio.
Yeah.
There could be like like the protection thing like could work. Like both teams get to protect like two heroes, but then I don't know, like the bans, I don't know. Like I'm open to it. Really, 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 really open to it. Like I think one thing I like about like the new dev team is it does feel like with like the season 9 changes, they're willing to do stuff.
Yeah. And
you know, the same community was like, this patch is fucking terrible. And everyone played at it. And I was like, oh, this is actually really good. Like, feels really good for everyone. Like, I don't see anyone complaining about season 9 ever anymore. I saw when the patch notes came out, everyone was really, really upset about it. So I think they are willing to change the game. Like I said, like, I think, in my opinion, everyone has this idea of like fun Overwatch in terms of the pros. My feeling is that less mirror matchups are like the only tangible thing that we can look to walk towards that actually improves fun, you know? I think that bullets only have pop-off heroes doesn't make it fun, I think.
Nope.
Like, the only thing is like to add like a strategical element, but I haven't figured out a way in my head for that to make sense so far.
Yeah, and I think whatever happens on the server is not nearly as important as the stories that are told outside of it and the drama that's created there. And I think, like, I was part... I made my start in esports content creation, World of Warcraft. Nobody fucking understood this game.
God, no.
Okay? I still remember making an ass out of myself, sitting next to the Dignitas owner, Odie, being, I think at the time we were top 5 in Europe, in terms of ladder play. We did play an IEM. I looked at what was happening, told Odie, oh yeah, your team is winning, and like 20 seconds later they lost the series. Like it was just impossible to really foretell. But the fucking viewership was cracking for the time. And why? Because like some weirdo had a blog where he like drama farmed the shit out of it, likening the pro players to Naruto characters, actually made a really compelling story, had like players hate him. That's another thing. Like, I think there's a lot of value in like externalizing the person to hate from players as well. Like if you just have like a, you know, Skip Bayless in your scene as well.
Yeah, but the uncoachables.
No, you're too likable still. Like you, I think you would have to turn it up a notch. I think Gamba has a chance. I think he's on his way there. He's one fan favorite. Favorite's career being destroyed away from it getting there, I think. But yeah, I think the stories that we tell are way more important realistically than the gameplay. And if we're being honest, this game has a PR problem. Have you ever? Okay, I'm going to use it, Joe. I have to. Have you ever heard about the Thermocline effect?
Oh Jesus!
Obviously not.
Okay, but basically, like, I'm not going to explain the physics idea, but like the social Thermocline effect is: imagine you have a product that gets incrementally a little bit worse for the consumer. And it gets worse, and it gets worse, and it gets worse. And then eventually there's one change that just, like, breaks the camel's back. And the owner says, okay, you don't like that change. And everyone's leaving and whatnot, right? And the owner says, okay, we notice, like, this change is not good. We're switching it back. It's over. The dams have fallen. Everything is fucked. Your viewer base has gained momentum in leaving your shit behind. Even if you put, you cannot put the genie back in the bottle. And I think for a lot of it, that has been Overwatch. Because objectively speaking, this product is better than it was after, I would say, even in a relative sense, ever since, it's the best state since 2018, I would say. Right? Mm-hmm. You could argue that.
You mean the game or the esport?
The game, it's specifically, right? And then the esport is attached to that at the hip in some way, in the perception of like what esports looks like and how understandable it is, and you know that is all overblown to a certain degree. And like if you look at our gaming comments, it's just like as if we are still playing goats, you know, like that. It's at some point we had too much ill will, and nobody's going to recommit. And in order to climb from that effect, it takes so much effort and work. Sometimes it never comes back, right? But that's like getting over that PR is only possible with good stories. And I think like taking charge of those stories is really challenging. But it takes some risk taking for sure.
I fundamentally agree with what you're saying, and I think that like when I sent you my original like streaming scrims like document that was like spelled worse than the 7-year-old child could have attempted, I really felt, and I think I still truly believe that the way to grow this is it has to be through the players, you know, and I think that
yes,
when everybody started to stream scrims, everyone's viewer count was really high. Like I remember when Astro would stream scrims, he would get like an extra like 40% viewers. The second every team, including us, shut off comms, that drop, he had less views than he would if he was playing ranked. And it feels like teams are really, really don't want you to stream comms for a few reasons. But yeah. I think once Ents stopped streaming comms, like which was like after like day one, other teams felt like they were giving away an advantage. That's how we felt a little bit, and it was really, really difficult. But I think there is like an element of bravery that is required from teams.
Yes.
Because if we do it, the only way you're going to get stories is like, imagine, okay, like unfortunately I think it will never happen, but imagine you got to listen to Gumba and the team discussing between maps what was going wrong against TM and what they should change. That is content which we could offer, which has to be so unbelievably juicy, and
I agree.
People must absolutely love it. And you must be able to like grow the sport a lot from that. Mm-hmm. I don't think teams can ever do it. I just don't think teams will ever be open to that level of letting the public see, you know?
Anything else? Yiska, anything coming down the pipeline? Obviously, Uncoachable's coming out sometime soon. Got some bangers guests. Yiska, what we got?
I mean, I've been trying to get an interview with one of the Defiant players. Hopefully, it's coming this week. And then, going to keep up. I guess, I'm in a blood feud with Commander X, according to Christopher now, so I gotta start shooting back with some more interviews.
You do. You gotta look at it as the rivalry, you know?
maybe it's not a terrible way to look at it, right? Like, there's also benefit there, for sure. And then otherwise, looking to look a little bit into, the general health of the scene and where it's at right now. I think a lot of the topics we covered today in terms of salaries and the involvement with Esports World Cup and whatnot, I'm looking into that, but nothing to report there yet.
Amazing. All right. That's it. 337 in the books. Chris, thank you so much for coming and chatting.
My pleasure.
Good luck in stage 2, and we will see you guys next week. GG's.
Oops. See ya.